Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject of Adam and fallen man. Thank you all so much for joining us. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we welcome you all. We'll start this morning with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 69 of Watchers, Prayers, and Arguments. The prayer there. The need of divine wisdom and love, Christ's assurance of prayer answered, and the absolute science of God's allness moves the Christian scientist to pray for the peace, prosperity, and brotherhood of all nations and peoples. No willpower is used in the scientist's prayer, since human will must be lost in the divine for prayer to be efficacious. In the words of Zechariah, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, said the Lord of hosts. I would ask that all Christians unite in prayer for the cessation of sin, the oppression of the weak, the accession of power at the sacrifice of individual rights, but especially that divine love shield the innocent from the wrath of the guilty and cause it to praise love. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful, thank you. All right, Karen.
Watch number 165. Watch lest you hold your concept of God and your concept of man as two separate parts of your scientific thought, as though you could have a right idea of God and a wrong idea of man at the same time. There is authority for the statement that the phrase, quote, hallowed be thy name, end quote, means man. If this be correct, then with the acknowledgement of God as Father comes the command to hallow man. If the windshield of your automobile was so dirty that it made everyone you looked at appear to be blurred, the rays of the sun shining through it on you would also become distorted. Quote, love is reflected in love, end quote. Your concept of your brother man determines how divine mind shines to you and through you. Striving to see humanity as God sees them, pure and perfect, opens the way for the love and power of God to flow to you and through you in ever-increasing purity and potency. If, on the other hand, you persist in holding even one individual in a wrong sense without striving to correct it, do not be surprised if divine love is distorted and reversed in your experience. The Bible tells us that Job found the way out of his discord, lack, and suffering when he prayed for his friends, Job 42, verse 10. His endeavor to see the Christ in others opened the way for the Christ to come to him.
Thank you very much. Comments on that?
Well, I looked up again the hallowed, the term hallowed, and it says hallowed, to reverence, to honor as sacred, to make holy, and then reverence means to regard with respect and affection. So obviously we are to feel that and know that about our Father, Mother, God, but at the same time, we're to honor as sacred and to make holy, regard with respect and affection our brother man, our fellow man. And that really helped me to see how I'm really supposed to see man with respect and make and holy and sacred, just as our Father, Mother, God.
Very beautiful. Thank you, Karen. Mm-hmm. It's also how you should see yourself, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, certainly.
You have to start with yourself. Read again that definition. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Hallowed, to reverence, to honor as sacred, to make holy, and reverence means to regard with respect and affection.
So, starting with yourself, you should regard yourself with respect and affection as the image and likeness of God.
Mm-hmm.
As what God has created. It's a very important point. And then go out and, yes, see all mankind this way. It's what brings healing. Mm-hmm. It goes along with that. Often quoted, it's in the lesson this week, that Jesus beheld in science the perfect man, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So
I think that's why perfect God, perfect man should become the basis of thought and demonstration, as he says in science.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. Good. That's it. That's it. And so if you're not there, get yourself there. You know, what is all this work and praying about if then you go off and see yourself and other people not in the light of this truth? Get yourself there. And as Nike says, do it.
Just do it.
Just do it. Don't think about doing
it. I thought it was really good how it said, if there is one individual that you're not striving to see this way, then you're off track. And, you know, I like that word striving because, you know, it's easy to say, well, I guess they're okay. But, you know, whether it's a politician or whoever it is, striving, I mean, that's a really tall order. But, yeah, got to be done, right?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
It does make a huge difference. I know there was at least one person that I had great difficulty getting to a place of forgiveness with. But once I did, it felt like a slingshot. You know, I just was able to progress quite far because of that. I'm so grateful for that.
Thank you. It is a requirement. And this is in the Lord's Prayer. That's why, again, it's in this lesson this week. You know, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. These are not suggestions or options. These are all laws and rules of God. They're commands. We have to do it. And you might as well get started on it right now. Florence?
Well, that part is forgive us for seeing your child wrongly. Forgive us for seeing anyone wrongly.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, thank you. And then there's that story about Mrs. Eddy where she looked out on the street. I forget what she thought she saw, but wasn't the child of God. And then she asked God's forgiveness for seeing something other than that child of God. And I believe the person was healed.
Mm-hmm.
So most important. And this is what keeps us out of the Adam dream. By seeing ourselves correctly and others correctly. It's a law and it's a discipline, but many wonderful things have happened by just applying these rules and laws and principles of God to our own lives.
And that is why this requirement is for my own good. I mean, you know, it's not going to change anything regarding the person that you have the attitude toward, although it will free that person to be better. But we do this because it's for our own good. Every commandment is out of love for the person who will follow the commandment.
And, you know, the end of the watching point, his endeavor, Job's endeavor to see the Christ in others opened the way for the Christ to come to him. It's another rule. You know, this idea of scientists using this science selfishly, after a while, I mean, you first come seeking the loaves and fishes, but after a while, that will not work.
Yeah.
If you don't give back, then the well, the streams, the rivers run dry. The love must flow and keep flowing. and you have to receive the love, be grateful for it, realize it's all around you. You're receiving it all the time, and then let it flow from you to others. And that's truly what brings joy. Otherwise, you're just a depressed, miserable mortal, and that's no fun. And you're in the Adam dream, and that's no fun either. There's nothing good about it.
His own hell.
Yep, you make your own hell.
It not only brings joy, but it also brings a continuous supply of good for you. It puts you in a spot where you are genuinely reflecting our infinite Father, Mother, God.
It is. It's
in a very practical way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this morning, Florence was going to share with us a beautiful article she found about home.
Okay. It's a 1909 Sentinel article by one called W.H. Jenkins, and it's called The Christian Science Home. It's on the website now, so anyone can read it if you want to. What we're talking about kind of ties in with it, because this woman who has suffered for a very long time found quite a bit of freedom from all the suffering and decided selflessly to have a home where people come and find peace, harmony, health. People are healed when they come to her home. So she's describing a Christian Scientist home, which should be one that people come in and feel the presence of God. You know, they feel a certain way, the peace, the love, the harmony there. And practically also the kind of literature that's around, you know, maybe Science and Health Bible, other literature that are comparable in that sense. Less materiality, talking about, you know, not so much talk about the food, the furniture, clothing, things like that. And she also talks about, like a Christian Scientist, you have to be an example of this kind of atmosphere where Jesus loved to go to heal. Like Jesus loved to go to the homes of John, Peter, Lazarus, Mary, and Martha, right? Because people came there and they were healed. He also talks about, you know, if we go out from such a home, then we have a certain consciousness in order to bless other people. So we know what Mrs. Eddy talks about, her own feeling about home. She says in page 58 of Science and Health that home is the dearest spot on earth. She also referred to Pleasant View on page 21 of Watchers, Prayers, and Argument, that a place where one seeks to establish divine mind as supreme in all things, even in the most commonplace and menial tasks, and to continue this effort until he has made divine mind his permanent mind, and all belief in a so-called human mind has been ruled out. This is what she thought of Pleasant View, that you know, when people came there, they came to learn how to do everything from the standpoint of divine mind. And so I think it's a very good article for everyone. I also want to share a little bit about how important this is. Home, we know, is consciousness, right? And one testimony that was given maybe a month or two ago by Krista. She says that when she went to the dentist, the dentist had found a cloud, you know, and she could see it perhaps on the X-ray. And she decided to go home and call in the practitioner. She was advised to read two articles because I think she herself was feeling that her home was not harmonious. And there she read Mrs. Eddy and Ella Holt's articles on home. And she said that home says, this is by Mrs. Eddy, our home is in divine mind, a spiritual consciousness, an eternal harmony of soul. Nothing can destroy the harmony of our home. And she also added at the end of Science and Health, where Psalm 23 says, and I will dwell in the house, the consciousness of love, forever. So I think all of it ties in to tell us how we should regard our home. Home, in the practical sense, the physical home, what it should be, and then also in the spiritual sense, the conscious, our consciousness, what kind of consciousness we have. Because from that is what we go out, and we are either a blessing or not a blessing to others. This is, you know, I just wanted to share that.
Okay. Yes, thank you. So beautiful. One thing Mrs. Evans always emphasized with us is our home, and that the reason that we have a home is to share it with others, to invite others in and to bless others with it. And I know there was a place, she used to point to a house, it was on Watchung Avenue in Plainfield, where there was, I guess it was a woman that went to our church. And Mrs. Evans always loved to go to this woman's house because of the peace she felt there. And, you know, there's so much today with looking on your phone and all of this kind of communication, but nothing compares to being with a person and having time spent. And as the holy days are coming up, and many of you are having people maybe to your home or going to a home, maybe remember this and make it. Do make it a holy time. And every house, it doesn't matter how humble your home might seem to be. You might just, you think, oh, well, I just live in a little one room place. It doesn't matter. You can make it beautiful, and you should make it beautiful. Because as we started out with, what affection and respect for yourself, then your home should have that affection and respect for your health. Yourself, even if it's a temporary home, wherever you live, make it beautiful, because that you're expressing God when you do that. So this is a very vital point. Thank you, Florence.
Mm-hmm. And also to, I guess, for all of us to remember, you know, Thanksgiving is coming, Christmas is coming, and sometimes, yes, we do get the demands of what you have to do. Or yes. Family expects you to do may override you staying in that purity of thought to bless others.
Now, thank you. That's very important, because above all else, your home should feel beautiful because you're in it. Mm-hmm. Your presence should make the peace that people feel.
And in this healing, and of course, this woman's teeth were completely healed when she went back. There was no sign of anything. But she said that, I reasoned that I never could be upset with God, so I could never be upset with God's idea man either, for God is all in all, and in him we live and move and have our being. It goes back again to the watching point. Peace within yourself, and as seeing yourself and others as the image and likeness of God. Along with that, there's an article in Mrs. Evans' book. I think it's Lectures and
Sermons and Articles.
Sermons and Articles. On page 15 to 16, about teeth, healing of a tooth problem. It said that someone, she had gone to a fine scientist, a friend of ours, at one time had just very terrible teeth. She had gone to the dentist. He said that all your teeth are discolored and decayed, and they need to come out at once. So she said, I don't want to do that right now. I'll contact you later. And she took the problem to God. She refused to let her thought be misdirected by materia medica calling itself dentistry. And then, like this other woman, Krista, she decided that she was going to see the perfect man everywhere. She found a beautiful verse in Song of Solomon, which said, in essence, "Thy teeth are like a flock of sheep, none of them barren, all perfect." And then as she studied Mrs. Eddy's writings, which is always what we should do when we have any problem, she found that the words discord and decay were almost always together. And she realized that she needed to wipe out the belief that she'd ever had any discordant situation in her life. And everywhere she met, she was making sure she didn't see anyone unloving, impatient, sick, hateful. And so the next time she went to the dentist, he said, this can't be the same teeth. There wasn't one trace of decay. They were beautiful and bright and lovely. So, and then Mrs. Evans says, think about it. Discord and decay, always coupled in our leader's writings. Go back in your thinking and make sure that you haven't stored some picture of discord that may have seemed to happen to you in years past, that you aren't keeping it around where it can spring up and bring forth a nasty picture, one that God never made, that God does not support, and therefore that with a clear understanding of Him can be destroyed. Now, this goes to other things, anything to do with pain. We were once told, you know, it's being indulging in painful thinking over a long period of time, bringing up things of the past, dwelling on those things. And then I thought this was very beautiful from Letter on Sight attributed to Mary Baker Eddy. It was something Tom from New York gave me years ago. But she says, the sense of feeling affects all other senses. And if you are sensitive about appearance, what people say or think about you, or what they do not say or think about you, or if you're sensitive about climate or cold, what you eat, what you wear, what you work at, or what you receive for it, or any other thing that displeases you, if you let it stir you up, it will go on to the weakest part of your body. A pain is only a frown expressed on the place where the trouble is. And the only remedy for it is to realize there is only one mind and that all things work together for good to those who love God. I find that very interesting. A pain is a frown expressed on some spot in your body. You've been frowning, fretting, fussing, foofing. And because you don't stop that kind of thinking, then again, in belief, because it's always in belief, it seems to show up on your body somewhere. All belief, the fretting, foofing, and fussing is belief, as well as the so-called physical manifestation of it. And then this also, getting back to teeth, this was very beautiful. This is from Collectania. On page 112, a member of Mrs. Eddy's household had an appointment with her dentist, and Mrs. Eddy needed her just when the appointment was scheduled and would not allow her to go. She said that if she had, she would have been allowing mortal mind to rob her of what she was sacrificing for the whole world's good. Mm-hmm. So what was more important, this person going to the dentist or working for the whole world? The need was met without the dentist, and the tooth was filled with substance. So, I have to put you on speaker. Hang on.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Zara.
I was only going to say home is the center, though not the boundary of the affections. Is something I've been working with in Perfect Man and Perfect God, which has helped me to really handle this belief of a frown of a belief of pain.
Thank you very much. It's beautiful, yes. And also, this is in Kimball's book, Teaching and Addresses, on page 130, Treatment for Pain. When mesmerized by pain, turn and say, I know what you are. This is not pain or a belief of pain. It is a belief of mind in matter. A lie of belief without a believer. Nothingness claiming to be something. I am not afraid. I am spiritual and so immune. So it's a powerful treatment, one you should know. And it gets back a belief of life and matter. So this brings us to the Adam dream, right? Because that's what this whole thing is about. It's a belief of life and matter. And we think it to be true and real, but it isn't. And we don't have to be there because we live truly in the kingdom of heaven. I love the last statement in, I believe it's the last statement in Science and Health of the lesson says that. Through discernment of the spiritual opposite of materiality, even the way through Christ's truth, man will reopen the key of divine science, the gates of paradise, which human beliefs have closed, and will find himself unfallen, upright, pure, and free. You can reopen the key to paradise, the gates of paradise, through divine science, through living this science, acknowledging this truth every day of your life, every moment of your life, prayer without ceasing. It is a way of life, and we must be true to it. Now, something that I've loved, and it was Carrie a while ago. She sent me this association addresses by Herbert Reiki, whom I love this guy. I love what he writes. And it's No Big Veto, No Big Power Veto, 1948 address. And it is on our website. And a few things he says I'm going to share, because it's all, you should read the whole thing if you haven't, and hopefully you have. It's all about Genesis and the lies about Genesis 2. I don't know, there are a whole bunch of them. It goes up to 39. This one is on page 53. We sometimes ask, why am I here anyway? And then he says, what do we mean by the word here? Do we mean a material world? Then we are accepting this lie that Jehovah has placed us in mortality. The alert Christian scientist knows that the only here is the omnipresence of God, spiritual perfection. It is Elohim, divine love, who places us in this heavenly kingdom. Be alert on this subject and its relationship to your home, environment, position, family relationships. Our leader says in Unity of Good, page 3, he guides every event of our careers. You know, in the study of the subject psychology, one hears a great deal in regard to the part that heredity and environment plays upon an individual. Here is a phase of the same lie that your environment determines who you are, what you can do, and what you will finally accomplish. Don't you accept this lie that a false sense of environment has any influence over you whatsoever, either the environment of yesterday or today. God, divine love, unfolds the good in your experience, for he has environed you in the kingdom of heaven. Now, how good is that, right? That's so great.
Don't get out. That's it.
Yes, don't get out. Don't be lulled like the prodigal son we read about on Wednesday. Don't get lured out of it, of this place. But you have to think of it. You have to love God more than anything. And as we'll get into soon, too, that's how you resist temptation. If you love God more than the temptation, you won't go there. And then this one, this is the 12th lie. We read, and the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. Here is the argument that someone is alone. Everything is not good. What a lie. Man is never alone. Do you know that the word alone really means all one? Man is forever, completely, altogether, all one with God. Hear Jesus' ringing words on this subject. Behold, the hour cometh, yea, is now come, that ye shall be scattered, every man to his own, and shall leave me alone. And then paused, and yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. If you want human hell, just think of yourself as all alone, and then self-pity and loneliness will consume you. And I've seen this happen. And I've seen people argue, if I ever give this to them, well, you're not alone. You have a, you know, you have a family or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, have a family and feel very and yes, we have people here who will testify to that. Yes. That is not the solution. Nope. That's not the solution.
Yep, okay. The loneliest I ever felt was in a room with other people.
There we go. So if you want human hell, just think of yourself as all alone, and then self-pity and loneliness will consume you.
Yes.
It's taken people out. Mm-hmm. There is only one thing worse than being alone, and that is to believe that you have to get some material creature as a helpmeet to take away your loneliness. God is forever your one and only helpmeet. And you can say, as Jesus did, I am not alone, because the Father is with me. Now, I don't want any of you to misunderstand what I am saying. I'm not speaking out against marriage. It is a wonderful institution. What the writer of Genesis is bringing out is that we must not be slaves to human relationships. I know that some people have made themselves miserable, and others who have made themselves fools trying to get a husband or a wife to overcome loneliness. That's really good. The only way to overcome loneliness is to recognize your all oneness with God, with infinite good. As you recognize this all oneness with God, you certainly make yourself much more attractive. You got that? You're not attractive when you're so needy and you can't live without somebody and you got to find somebody. That's just not attractive, okay?
It's attracting something you don't want.
Or it's attracting, yes.
But society emphasizes man's completeness, you know, that we are complete. So that should tell us something.
It should tell us a lot.
Right. And if you get to that point, or if you strive for that point, it will be a good example for people around you, and they will be attracted to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good for everybody.
Yes. Yeah, so he says that. He says the only way to overcome loneliness is to recognize your all oneness with God, infinite good. As you recognize this all oneness with God, certainly you make yourself more attractive. You may do such a good job of it that a very good companion finds you. But this companionship is just one of the things added, which come with the realization of your allness with God and the recognition that all of his ideas are related harmoniously together to his law.
Which means that kind of companionship is on the right, correct basis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's God first, last, and always.
There's a quote that I've been thinking about recently. Mrs. Eddy says that the Christian Scientist is alone with his own being and with the reality of things. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, what that really means, but that's what she said. Got to understand that.
Yes, and go ahead.
And we have that great Bible quote, excuse me, that says,
your creator is your spouse. I believe it's in Isaiah. And it's so wonderful to understand that.
Yes, your maker is your husband. Yeah, but it's interesting because Riki goes on to say, be careful with that. I think evidently it sounded like a lot of Christian Scientists were quoting this to their husbands. and he said, how would you like it if your husband's going around saying, you know, your creator is my wife or something, you know? So anyway, I just thought that was humorous, but yes, no, especially if you are alone, to know you have that helpmeet in God, that beautiful statement that he is your influence, protecting power and divine influence. He's there for you, talking to you, helping you. You are complete in him. The kingdom of heaven is within you. And this gets you out of that Adam dream where you're a miserable, suffering mortal, which there's no end to it and there's no good to it. It cannot satisfy. But you have to work at knowing these truths and staying consistent with these truths. And then, yes, wonderful things are happening. As Dorothy Riki says, good things do happen as you know this truth and stay in the kingdom of God. And Carol, you demonstrated this when your husband passed on.
I was just thinking about that. It felt like a hole within me. I felt empty. I was sitting at the table with my son and daughter-in-law right after it happened. And I thought for a second, I still have God. What more?
Yes.
What more do I need? And then, of course, also, do I believe everything that Mrs. Eddy has said? And if I believe it, I'm going to live it. And that was another big turning point. Mm-hmm. And it was quite something.
Quite powerful. And she's been
an experience.
Cheerful ever since. And yes. And she knows that Jim didn't go anywhere. He's still with her. And so it filled that vacancy. But Mrs. Eddy says that would life without. And she says personal friends seem a blank. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful statement. That word personal, too. Personal is not good. And all the good that Jim was, all the good that anybody is, comes from God anyway. And if you see it as that divine source, you can never lose it. Even if that person doesn't seem to be with you anymore, God is, as Carol said, and that was all the goodness that Jim was and still is God.
What more can you ask?
What more can you ask? But this is getting your basis of living off material to spiritual, which we all have to do, and we all have to learn it. Sooner or later, you'll have experiences. And I think it was in the Wednesday reading where Mrs. Eddy says, our only relative on heaven and on earth is
God.
Yes. And he's our great physician. He's our everything.
Yeah, I've been thinking.
Go ahead.
This is Wendy. I was going to say, I've been single my whole life, and I think back, and I can't think of a time that I ever felt loneliness, because I've always had God as part of my life.
And that's beautiful.
And you know, that quote, I was thinking of what you said about that Bible quote. It doesn't say your spouse is your creator. It says your creator is your spouse. So I thought it was funny that someone, I guess it's a misunderstanding.
Well, it is. I found it humorous, too, that he would even have to bring that up. But that's sort of the typical people that misinterpret things and use it in a wrong way. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, it is a very beautiful thought. Your husband, your spouse, yes, whatever you need is God. Whatever you need, friendship, spouse, whatever. And he comes to you in whatever way you need to meet your need. Don't make it too complicated. Just accept his presence, his power, and his love. You don't have to think about, well, is it this or that, or doesn't, you know, he's supposed to be my consciousness. How can he be my best friend? He's all those things. He's all of the above. He's your consciousness and your best friend. He's everything to you. All things he is.
And he's always there.
And he's
never missing.
He's never missing. Yes. Day or night. songs in the night. He's always there with you. And I love that. So,
in the morning into praise.
Yes. And this is why, and Carrie sent me a slew of beautiful articles, one of them on gratitude, and by Ella Hoag, I think. And that is one way. I always call it your instant connection with God. If you're ever feeling sad, lonely, or depressed, you count your blessings one by one. But mainly know, not just for the physical thing, whatever that might you might think it is, but that it the source is God. It's an expression of God being with you. And if you think you have nothing to be grateful for, you better think again. And this is why we have our testimony meetings every week. This is Eddie was very wise in this. And Mrs. Evans would say, if you don't have one thing to be grateful for after a whole week, what's the matter with you? And true, it was a demand on all of us that we come Wednesday night with a testimony. And we did.
It feels good.
And it feels good.
It's not a curse. It's a blessing.
Yes, it is.
Very, very good thing. I don't think I would. I actually know I would not be a practitioner now. It wasn't for the fact of being ready every week to give a testimony. That meant so much to me through the years.
Yeah.
But now I have 12 years of testimonies that I can look back on.
That's it. It's a wonderful thing.
It doesn't mean it's easy. I mean, we may look easy, but we have to face down all the kinds of suggestions.
Nothing worthwhile is.
Yeah, nothing worthwhile. Thank you.
And then, you know,
an expectation of good.
Yes.
Lawrence?
And it's so wonderful to know that in the middle of the week, we have that feast of spirituality to go to the next middle of the week. And then on Sunday, we have another feast. It's just so amazing.
You're right. And we're all doing together in unity, well, those of us in our church here, which is a mighty power. A mighty power. And as I said, people will ask me, well, why are the churches closing and all this? Well, because people weren't grateful. They didn't give testimonies. They didn't come to church anymore. And even if you come to church on Wednesdays and don't give the testimony, have one prepared and be ready. And do one every week. You'll find you'll have this huge portfolio of things you're grateful for. And then when Eric tries to knock on your door and tell you, oh, nothing's right, nothing's ever been right, and my life's always been miserable, you can go, oh, yeah? The hell you say. The hell you say.
Yeah, no matter how small your demonstration may seem to be, that's just mortal mind telling you, oh, well, you don't have anything really big to report here, but it's not small. When it happens, it's huge to you that that feeling of God that's with you is just, there's nothing small about it. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
I think it's the selflessness, too, of you know, the whole exercise of giving testimony. You're doing it to bless someone. And I find that that is what is so motivating, to do it to bless someone.
Thank you. That's another reason. These are laws and of the universe you're putting into operation. First, your gratitude to God. Yes, then to bless someone else. And as someone once said years ago, I never forgot, if this blessed me, it will bless someone else. And as Elizabeth was saying, doesn't matter how small. You'd be surprised the next on Thursday, people say, oh, this testimony meant so much to me. It was some little, perhaps thought of as a little demonstration. But it meant everything to somebody else.
And I have seen that. Seen that the other part of what churches are closing is about that doing good and, you know, faith without this is dead. That's a big other part of churches closing, because the doing the good and doing the deeds is not there.
No, thank you. And if you're not obedient to these laws, how can you expect the healing? I mean, people want healing, but they don't want to change. And they want these instantaneous cures that they talk about from Jesus's time. But It's time now. We've had this science for a long time. Where are we on it? It's time we demonstrate, and it's time we earn our healings. And then by earning them, they're really ours. No one or nothing can take it from us. And then we share it with others to bless them. This is the way it has to be. And if you're not interested in this, then go somewhere else. Go take your pill. Go to some other church. But this is the real science. And these are the laws that if you obey them, they keep you happy, contented, peaceful, and you will go forth with rejoicing. Now, the story also.
They're helping me because they tell me basically where I'm at, if I'm still on the right path. And anybody, it coerces me to be humble, to go when I don't have anything, go to God and find out. You know, of course things have happened, but I'm not aware. And just work at it till I realize what has really been going on and what do I have to be grateful for, and either get back on the right path or just, you know, share it.
Thank you so much. It's an indication that that time you say, I don't have anything to be grateful for, you're mumbling, grumbling, shows you're drifting away from God. You're drifting out of his house. Pulls you back in. Get back to where you should be and hang on. Now, the three temptations.
Good is always going on, yeah. Good is always going on. And that great line that Mary Baker Eddy said about Christianity, you have it as you live it. It is so important for Christian Science.
Yes. Now, Jesus' three temptations are very important to think about because we are all tempted. Everyone gets tempted, even the Jesus himself was tempted. That's not the issue. The issue is what you're going to do about the temptations. And he explains it pretty darn well. And there are all these temptations, mainly about self, power, materiality, human desires. But he was above it all. He would say, it is written. He'd refer back to the scriptures. He would state the truth. And he would do it instantly. He didn't invite the devil in for a cup of tea and talk to it. He got right at it. And because of that, it left. So I guess now, although there's plenty more, but we're going to end with an article Carrie sent on that, on the overcoming of temptation by Albert Gilmore.
Albert Gilmore writes, and this is an editorial in the February 1928 Sentinel, I guess. Anyway, he writes, temptation, as the word is commonly used, relates only to the claims of evil. And surely there can be no more effective method of resisting evil than to fill consciousness with the love of good, and thus become conscious only of God's presence. Obviously, Jesus was abiding in this state of consciousness when he said, quote, for the prince of this world cometh and hath nothing in me, end quote. Upon his mentality, so freed from evil, temptation could make no impression, for it had nothing in common with the tempter. Here is a valuable lesson for all who are seeking to free themselves from whatever is false through laying hold of the true. Temptation, that is, the allurement of evil, finds no place in the spiritualized consciousness. Our defense, then, is to become conscious only of reality, of the presence of good. Worship of God alone precludes the possibility of giving reality or power to aught unlike God, that is, to materiality in its every phase. Understanding God as the infinite and omnipotent destroys the desire to accept as real whatever does not emanate from a divine source. Then, is not the answer to the query, how is temptation overcome? Simply this. Determine first the source of any given presentment. If it is from God, that is, if it is good, accept it. If not, resist and cast it out, as did Christ Jesus, so persistently beset by the claims of evil. This is the effective overcoming of temptation. Mortals are not left to material means and practices alone whereby to overcome the profferings of evil. Divine aid is at hand. The Lord's Prayer contains a petition for aid, which may become most effective in commanding God's help, especially when utilized in connection with the spiritual interpretation of the passage given on page 17 of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, quote, "And God leadeth us not into temptation, but delivereth us from sin, disease, and death," end quote. These words contain the complete antidote to the inclination to accept any claim whatsoever of evil as real, end quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.